been a PC for just 9 months when she responded to the call at a travel agent's in Bradford in 2005. Pirandita Khan, who's now 75, was extradited after fleeing to Pakistan. West Yorkshire Police have released custody footage where he can be heard denying the killing.
Pirandita Khan, on the 18th day of November 2005, murdered Police Constable Sharon Beshinivsky.
Have you any reply to that charge? Do you wish to say anything?
I'm not murdering anybody.
Detectives who recovered 35 bodies from a funeral directly in Hull say they've been in with more than 700 families. An investigation was launched into suspected financial and fraudulent activity at Legacy Independent Funeral Directors last month. Officers also found human ashes. Here's Tom McLaughlin from Humberside Police.
Whilst the expert opinion provides us with an assurance that proper crematorium processes have been followed, unfortunately, given the high temperature required to carry out cremation, the DNA will have been broken down and degraded to such a level that we would not be able to recover a meaningful DNA profile.
The Prime Minister is being urged to publish legal advice he's received about the war in Gaza. More than 600 experts have written to Rishi Sunak warning against the supply of weapons to Israel. There'll be more rail disruption later this month as drivers at LNER walk out. ASLEF members are going on strike on Saturday the 20th of April. Arsenal say midfielder Frida Marnham has been cleared for a progressive return to training. The Norway international collapsed on the pitch at the weekend and she's now been fitted with a heart monitor. And the UK could see all seasons this weekend. The Met Office has issued warnings for snow across the Highlands tomorrow, while temperatures could reach 20 degrees Celsius in the south of England on Saturday. That's the latest. I'm Anna Bates.
This is Phoenix FM.
Weather. Phoenix FM, proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
Well, as you've just heard, this weekend there's going to be snow, heat waves, the lot right across the country. Anyway, coming closer to home, rain will continue to push across from the west this evening and overnight. Cloud skies, strong winds and showery outbreaks of rain the rest of the night, pretty much like it's been the last 24 hours. Lows of 11 degrees centigrade. Into tomorrow, cloud and early rain will clear to the east in the morning. And you'll get some sunshine and showers soon after. Showers becoming more isolated towards the end of the day. It will be very mild. Top temperature of 17 degrees centigrade. That's not bad.
Weather on Phoenix FM. Sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company. Proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit SEHBAC.com for help with your home.
Phoenix FM travel news.
Well, there's a lot going on out there, and I'll start from my hometown, Billericay. Now, there's been a fire at the north end of the high street. It's not actually on the high street. I think it's in one of the buildings behind the shops. But it looks quite serious from what I've seen on social media. And the high street is indeed shut all the way from Sun Corner down to the lights at Western Road and Norsey Road. And to make things worse, that top end of Norsey Road has been closed all week for roadworks. So traffic is fairly chaotic if you're in that area. If you know any of the back routes away from the high street, I'd use those because there are tailbags in every direction. Approaching to the high street from the station is all nose to tail. And at the other end from some corner going down the London Road, that's all stuffed up as well, as is Western Road, where it meets the junction of London Road, half corner in old money. So take it easy and try and work out an alternative if you can. Further afield on the M25 clockwise, there are long delays coming into Essex following an earlier accident in the Dartford Tunnel. There are tailbags down to junction 4, that's for Orpington. There are also long delays going the other way across the QE2 bridge after an accident at Junction 1B. Congestion going back to Junction 30. That's for the A13. Out in Hadley, It's slow moving on the London Road, the A13, between the Rayleigh Weir and Crown Hill. In Chelmsford, it's slow on the Springfield. It's always slow on the Springfield Road, this time between Victoria Road and Highbridge Road. The A130 southbound is slow between the Rettenden Turnpike and the Fair Glen Interchange. And the A13 is slow between Stamford La Hope and the Five Bells Interchange. Onto the trains, all looks okay, but there is a bit of chaos lined up. The good news is that Monday's tube strikes have been called off. But on the trains, strikes remain in place on Greater Anglia, Stansted Express and C2C. That's from Monday. And there will be a reduced service. It looks like it's going to be all right tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday, but just be prepared. Check with the websites before you set off. And that's your travel.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Well, my thanks as always to Jo for Drive. She is back again tomorrow at 3 o'clock. From now until 7, non-stop cricket. It's 98 and about with me, Darren Mutu.
On 98 FM and online, this is Phoenix.
Cricket, lovely cricket.
Well, the wait is almost over.
Reach the cricket. I miss it.
One more sleep and it will be the start of the English first class cricket season. A lot of excitement around. And the clocks have gone forward too, so it's a bit lighter in the evenings. So we'll be looking forward to that tonight with my special guest, Victoria Polly of BBC Essex. We'll be talking about what this year has in store for Essex and county cricket in general. Remember that BBC will be providing a ball-by-ball coverage of every county game this season, so there's no excuse to miss out. And of course, most counties offer a really good YouTube streaming service as well, so we'll be talking about all of that. Usual features, birthdays of the week. Music tonight from The Shaman, McFly and UB40. We're talking about what's been going on with England men and England women. Bit of an update from the IPL. But our focus tonight will be on county cricket here in England. There's lots of news, lots of things to talk about it. So put the kettle on, make yourself a cup of tea. Maybe crack open a can of something stronger. This is 98 Not Out.
Lovely cricket, got to lick the ball before it reach the wicket.
And of course, on the FM dial, we are on 98 FM.
Players them in a full suit.
Via the internet, phoenixfm.com. Via mixcloud.com. Or if you're really modern, shout at your smart speaker to play Phoenix FM and we'll come through loud and clear. And don't forget as well the Phoenix FM newsletters. You go to any page on phoenixfm.com, you will see a link. Make sure you click to that, subscribe, it's for free, and you will get updates on everything wonderful going on at Phoenix FM. Loads of great shows. All types of music, all types of sport.
Man called Jah Thomas in a rubber dub style. Man called Jah Thomas in a different style. Man called Jah Thomas at the change up in style. Man called Jah Thomas in a strong style.
Alright, it's time to get stuff going.
Lovely cricket.
As always, we'll start with this. It's cricket birthdays of the week. And as usual, some great names on the list. Starting off with Hashim Amla, 41 years old. Adam Zampa of Australia and the Brentwood Cricket Club, he's 32. Former Essex coach Paul Grayson, 53. India's Murali Vijay, 40. A man that's in the news this week, Jofra Archer, 29. Lord Gower, 67. Stephen Fleming, 51. Vikram Solanki, recently at Surrey, 48. Arnold Sidebottom, father of Ryan, 70. John Morris, 60. Former Australia captain Michael Clarke, 43. Tom Latham, 32. Dermot Reeve, 61. Tisara Pereira, 35. Jake Mickleborough, 34. Stephen Finn, 35. Jonathan Agnew, 64. Colin Ackerman, 33. I'm still going. Dane Patterson, 35. Paul Downton, 67. Dilip Vengsarkar, 68. Shaheen Afridi, 24. Liam Plunkett, 39. Mudassir Nazar, 68. Older listeners will remember him from the Pakistan team in the early 80s. He was an absolute superstar. And listeners, Andrew Maxwell, 63 today. Paul Parker, 60 today. Michael Patterson, 66. Dave Shires, 57. And the Orient Hours, Karen Harrison, 53. So happy birthday to everyone celebrating this week. And, of course, remember, if you want to be added to the cricket birthdays of the list of the week list, email me, radio@phoenixfm.com. Title your mail, 98 Not Out Birthdays, and just tell me whose birthday it is, how they're going to be, and whatever else. And I will make sure it gets read out amongst all the others.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Okay, let's just have a bit of music to get us going. This is The Shaman and Move Any Mountain on Phoenix FM.
below me, we roving above the sky. I feel no fear to be here, it's oh so fine. Shining brightly like sunlight inside my mind.
That's a shaman, move any mountain.
With the English season rapidly approaching, it must mean one thing. The arrival of the eighth edition of the Cricketer magazine, a bumper 116-page special with two pages on each of the 18 first-class counties and our hugely popular fixtures wall chart. We also have Vic Marks, George DeBell, David Gower, Liam Plunkett, Nick Friend, Mike and Tanya Aldred. That's all in the 8th edition of the Cricketer magazine, out now.
98 FM. It's Phoenix 98 FM.
OK, and we'll start tonight's news roundup with England and the news this week that Test captain Ben Stokes has informed England managing director Rob Key of his decision to opt out of the T20 World Cup at a recent meeting between the pair in the North East. He said, I'm working hard and focusing on building my bowling fitness back up to fulfil a full role as an all-rounder in all forms of cricket, Ben Stokes said. Opting out of the IPL and World Cup will hopefully be a sacrifice that allows me to be the all-rounder I want to be for the foreseeable future. The recent test tour of India highlighted how far behind I was from a bowling point of view after my knee surgery and 9 months without bowling. I'm looking forward to playing for Durham in the county championship before the start of our test summer. I wish Joss and Motti, that's Matthew Mott, all the best in the in defending our title. That's good news for county cricket. As I said last week, there's going to be a lot of big names appearing certainly in the early stages of the competition. And I think quite a mouth-watering fixture early on will be Durham in Essex. And if all the big names are potentially there, including Stokes, but also Dean Elgar and all the Essex regulars, Harmer, etc., etc., that's going to be a great game. England, who claimed the first of their two 20 or T20 World Cup titles when West Indies last hosted it in 2010, begin their campaign with a match against Scotland in Barbados on June the 4th. I know a few people are going out for that one. They then face group encounters with Australia, Oman and Namibia in their bid to qualify for the Super 8 stage. That tournament is then followed by a home test series for England against the West Indies and Sri Lanka before a T20 and a one-day series against Australia in September. A very, very busy summer.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
And with England women, leg spinner Sarah Glenn has left England's tour of New Zealand as she continues to recover from concussion. She hit her head on the turf attempting a catch during the third T20 match in Nelson on the 24th of March. She was initially ruled out for the final two matches and the first of the ODIs, but will now miss the rest of the series after further assessment. They haven't called up anyone else, so there's a squad, or that left a squad of 15 remaining players. But nonetheless, Heather Knight's side won the T20 series 4-1, and earlier today sealed a series win with a victory in the second ODI in Hamilton. And just sticking with women's cricket, Sri Lanka's women sealed an historic first ever T20I series win in South Africa, winning the final match by 4 wickets. Sri Lankan cricket is on a bit of a roll at the moment, so we're looking forward to them coming over here this summer, and also with the West Indies. I can't wait.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
I'm John Charby, inviting you to join me here on Phoenix FM on Saturday afternoons for Phoenix Sport. The top local, national and international sports stories, plus live scores, results, reports, interviews, quiz questions and my sporting anniversaries. And lots of great music too. That's Phoenix Sport, every Saturday from 3 till 6 p.m. here on Phoenix 98 FM.
Tune into the Sunday Sessions on Phoenix FM every Sunday morning, 10 till 12, with me, Kevlar. I'll be bringing you tracks from local artists. Most of those tracks are recorded down at our open mic, which takes place every Monday at 8 p.m. at the Essex Arms in Brentwood, right next door to Brentwood Station. Come along and just watch, or if you're a singer or songwriter, come along and sing us a song.
Sing, sing, sing.
It's me, Michelle Ward. A prawn cocktail.
I love
a prawn cocktail. I'm always rambling. What is the mayor's chain called?
Chain. Chain.
In fact, I never stopped talking. And I rubbed, basically, all of the skin off the inside of my thigh. You can answer my question of the day. I think men go through the menopause from about the ages of 18 to 65. And after that, they die. Fantastic guests and super music. What am I lacking in the diet? Humour, really?
Yes.
Weekdays 10 till 1.
Make sure you tune into those excellent shows on Phoenix FM. John Chubb follows me tonight with his other show, the Non-League Hour. And, I was out with him and Andy Gilson from the Orient Hour last night. We went out and had a splendid Chinese meal and a good old catch. I haven't seen Andy for a little while. And, yes, we know he's back in action because there's a great big bowl of biscuits here in the studio. So, good work, Andy. All right, time for my guest today. This is Victoria Polly from BBC Essex. Well, one more sleep. The cricket season is here. And for those of you that live in the Essex area, and I'm assuming you're a cricket fan or a Luddite, you will know full well who my guest is today. It's none other than Victoria Polly from BBC Essex. Victoria, good to speak to you.
Thank you very much for having me. Feels a bit different to be the one in the interviewee chair.
That's right. The tables have turned. So, yeah, you'll think it's like to squirm amongst the Gestapo-like questioning that's coming your way. But fear not, fear not. So, first up, Around the Wicket is back every Wednesday at 6:30. Is it 6:30 or is it 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock, 6 till 7.
Right. And a bit like 98 Not Out, an hour of top quality cricketing content. What have you got lined up in the short term on the show?
Well, in the short term, at the moment, if you go to BBC Sound, you'll be able to listen to a preview of the season gearing up to getting underway and just having a chat with some of the players and staff about their hopes for the season. But we run all the way through to the end of the county season. So we'll have plenty of stuff reacting and previewing the Essex games, catching up with the women, the ability teams, as well as everything going on in the club cricket world as we start to get towards the end of April and everything starting back up, fingers crossed, with the weather. It's just a really good opportunity to get around the county and speak to different clubs about amazing things that they're doing on and off the pitch. And I always love the passion and the love of the volunteers who are involved in their local clubs across Essex. That's one of my favourite things about doing the programme, is just uncovering all these wonderful stories from around the country. As much and as well as loving the professional side of it and covering the Essex games, it's just getting really into the nitty gritty of cricket in the county is what I love to do.
Yeah, and it's really important to highlight that. I know BBC Essex do a fantastic job of getting around the clubs and just getting to showcase the volunteer culture, because club cricket is nothing without all of its volunteers. I've even had Dick Davis accost me down at Billericay down the years to just let people know what's going on. And there are a lot of characters around the scene as well, aren't there? There are lots of people that come hell or high water, rain, shine, winds or storms, they are there trying to do their bit for the club.
Absolutely. The dedication is just unbelievable, the hours that people pour in. But I think it's why we love the game, isn't it? Most of us who are involved or working in it like we do have volunteered in some capacity in our time being involved in cricket. And you mentioned Billericay. I remember the hours I spent there scoring when we used to come over for the district finals and the summers that I got to spend in the school box. So we all like to get involved in our own way, whether it is to do with the on-pitch matters or whether it is putting in the hours. And I don't know how people do it with the grounds and getting the pitches ready. So you do get to meet some brilliant characters who who love cricket and love their clubs and have been doing it for years. And I think those clubs who uncover those volunteers are so lucky to have them, and lots of them know it. They don't take it for granted, but there is those kind of people at every club across the county and across the country, I think.
Yeah, and when you go around all the clubs and see lovely facilities and the clubhouses and the bars and all the rest of it, the dressing rooms, it doesn't happen by accident. There aren't the magic fairies that land in the middle of the night and prepare the wicket or mark out the boundaries or clean out the showers or anything like that. There are loads and loads of people that do it, that get in there and do it. So I think it's really good that BBC Essex make a point of highlighting the good work that these people do. And of course, Essex about to get underway. Always a huge sense of anticipation when the first class season is upon us. It feels to me like it's a brand new chapter for Essex on and off the pitch. They've been through a pretty turbulent time with the Newton report and the historic the allegations of historic racism, etc., etc. I don't really want to dwell on that because I think we've moved on. There's a new board in place, and also on the pitch, we've seen the departures of Dan Lawrence and the retirement of Sir Alistair Cook. Just starting with the playing side of it, it just feels a bit reminiscent of we get these periods in Essex cricket where big names depart the stage. I think the last time this happened was when we lost James Foster and Graham Napier and Dave Masters, which was all in very quick succession. If it wasn't the same year, was it 2016? I think it might have been. And the feeling amongst members was, oh, well, what are we going to do now? But it was almost like a springboard for what happened for the years following that. Now, we've got Dean Elgar has turned up, and also Jordan Cox has arrived from Kent. Do you kind of feel that we're in that sort of springboard territory again?
I think I've kind of been weighing it up in my head all the way through the off season since we had that news confirmed that Sir Alistair Cook was retiring, which I think we all were fearing towards the end of the season with the speculation and knowing that Dan Lawrence was going. It did feel it's a massive loss. The two massive players who've been a part of Essex for so long, and I know Sir Alistair Cook had his time with England, but have been mainstays of this Essex side for big parts of the most successful 5 years or so that Essex has had. So it did feel like a big gulf to fill. And we knew about the Jordan Cox signing, and I think that's really exciting for Essex in red and white ball stuff. And it was always that question of who is going to replace Alistair Cook. There are definitely youngsters that are coming through and developing that I see being a big part of the Essex future for lineup. But I don't think you could have really got a better replacement than Dean Elgar. And he knows that. I've spoken to him and Jordan Cox in the lead up to the season. And I think they both know the pressure that's on their shoulders to come into this Essex side and perform because of those players that they're replacing. I mean, they've got to bed in. It does still feel like there will be a bit of a transitional period because they are not the same players that Essex will need to adapt. But at the same time, myself and a colleague were going through how we think the Essex back lineup will look, and you actually look at it and think, oh, well, actually, that sounds really strong when you say it out loud. And also, as I was saying to a colleague as well, the fact that as much as those are big players for Essex, the players that we've mentioned who aren't there anymore, there has been so much success for Essex down to that bowling attack, which has been consistent in the players and the performances in the recent season. So I think yes, you want your batting to be at the best it possibly can be, and you don't want any collapsing. But at the same time, that Essex bowling attack has been so strong. If they can continue that kind of level of standard, you hope there won't be too much to change. All you've really got to worry about is what other teams are doing and how do you go about stopping someone like Surrey?
Yeah, exactly, on all fronts. It's good that you mentioned the youngsters, and a feature of Essex cricket for many, many years has been the relentless conveyor belt of talent that comes through the academy and through the youngsters. Now, we had three players at the under-19 World Cup just recently that acquitted themselves pretty admirably. It's just a feature of, you know, there's a huge contrast on county cricket at the moment, and, you know, the comings and goings, the costings of it, you know, what trajectory does the game go in. But Essex has always been a really good example of the importance of sourcing local talent, promoting local talent. And I think there was a statistic quite recently that I think it was as much as 7 or 8 of the first team squad were all born in the same hospital, Rush Green, down at Romford. And even though we've got two new arrivals into the squad, the base of it is still homegrown and very much homegrown within the local area.
Yeah, is it I don't know that area as well, but is it Whipps Cross? Is that where
the
Whipps Cross, yeah. So, yeah, you're right. There's a certain percentage of the team who have progressed through the academy. And, yeah, I think that's really important, and it's something that Essex prides itself on. I think both, not just in the men's cricket, but some of the women, they've got the emerging programme where they all come through. So I think, yeah, it's a massive part of what Essex do. And you mentioned those three players who've been out with the England under-19 squad at the World Cup, and we saw glimpses of them in the One Day Cup, and a couple of people have asked me, oh, how much do you think they'll feature? Do you think we'll see them more perhaps in Red Bull or T20 Blast? And you think about it, but there's even players a bit older than them that are still looking to really cement places in the first team, the likes of Feroz Cushy and Robin Das, who I'd certainly like to see at points given a go in the Red Bull team if there's opportunity. So I think Essex are blessed with youngsters, and it's professional sport. We've seen some who you think are going to go on to great things and it doesn't work out, or they end up going to another county and then having a brilliant time in the case of Rishi Patel. But yeah, it certainly the way in which they're able to produce these players with the academy, it seems like the pathway must be doing something right.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, last season, against pretty much all expectations, it wasn't too bad in the end. Runners-up in the county championships and very close run runners-up in the Blast. Do you think the bar is set that high for this season? What are your personal expectations on what can be done?
I'm trying to remember what I predicted last season. I mean, I probably always say, oh, well, you know, there's no reason Essex can't go on to win it. But I don't know that I necessarily thought they would be challenging for the title, certainly for as long as they did throughout last season. The fact that they kept it going all the way was really pleasing. So I think I don't think there's any expectation on them, but you'd like to think they set themselves such high expectations and high standards that they will expect that. But outside, I think everyone's just waiting to see how they perform, certainly in the county championship, and how much they can be trying to reach the likes of Surrey, who I think we all would agree will probably be challenging to hold on to the title. T20 Blast, again, I would have liked to think they were going to get to final state. I'm not sure I expected them to, and particularly after performances in the group stages and the way they managed to sneak it in the quarterfinals as well, to get so close in the way that they did was both heartbreaking and great to see. The way in which they stuck to their guns, the way they like to play that aggressive attack, and it almost paid off for them. So I think there's lots to be excited about when we know the likes of Daniel Sams will be back, and it'll be interesting to see Jordan Cox involved in that, and the winter that Paul Walters had as well. There is lots to be excited about, but I think maybe that they'll put the expectations on themselves, but there might not be the expectation outside of Essex, certainly in the county championship, but maybe that will serve them well. And you know, who doesn't back an underdog?
I'm glad you mentioned Paul Walter, a product of Billericay, by the way. He's had an incredible winter. He's a cult figure in Australia after his exploits in the Big Bash. Tall Paul as they call him, to the point where he was putting on his Instagram of having difficulty walking down the streets in Brisbane without being accosted for selfies and autographs.
Yeah, it was great. I've been chatting to him as well in the lead up to the start of the season. And yeah, it sounds like he's had a great time. It's been great to see the way in which he's been performing and, you know, to have won as well. It just all adds up for him. And I think it's probably the way that you feel about him at Billericay, where every time there's some kind of sort of social media outburst at Tallpool, we in Essex go, well, he's one of ours. And you probably feel even more like that at Billericay, just wanting to claim him because everyone's sort of catching on to him. And I think, yeah, it's been so nice to see the way in which he's progressed across all formats, actually, I think, in the past few years, because we've obviously seen him have those great performances in the 100 and things like the BBL with the white ball stuff. But also, I've always liked him in the red ball game, and it kind of took him a while to break through and really cement a place in that team. And I think we've probably got more to come from him as well, to see more of him bowling and the runs scoring in the red ball stuff. But he's such an asset to Essex, and I was asking him as well if, you know, he's got ambitions of going on to other things. I don't know whether he's thinking about an outside chance of any kind of England call-up, but he's certainly attracting fans all over the country.
Well, he could be a left-field choice for the World Cup. I think that would be a surprise, but not an unexpected surprise for those of us that sort of are closer to him. But yeah, has he stopped growing, by the way? Because every time I see him, he seems to be another inch taller.
I did see quite a funny picture of him today next to Arfan Akram. Apparently, when they were out in Abu Dhabi, Arfan decided that he needed to have a picture with Tallpool, and it's certainly what you can imagine from it. It's nice for me because he's one of the only people to make me feel small. So that's always a nice feeling. I have to crane my neck up when I'm interviewing.
So off field, I'm not going to wander into any controversial territory here, but after a troubled 2020, well, last couple of years, I suppose, with off-field events, we've got a new chairman. The board is kind of sort of setting a new course. I went to the AGM, which I thought was very impressive, and the club since then, we've had a members' forum where they are very clear on the future direction of this club. There's no point dwelling on the past. It's time to move forward. And I got the distinct impression that they have a plan, which they presented to members, mainly based around whether Chelmsford gets redeveloped or they move away. But the target, it's a roadmap to 2030, because there's a women's T20 World Cup and a women's World Cup on the horizon, which Essex want to be part and parcel of, because women's cricket has been incredibly popular at Fortress Chelmsford, packed houses, and from what I read and hear, England's ladies love playing there. But from what Essex are saying, they unveiled a redevelopment of Chelmsford, which to me looked mightily impressive, and from what they were saying in terms of costs and timescale, eminently doable. Have you seen these new plans?
Yes, yeah, I haven't seen all the detail, but I'm aware of the plans and the things that Essex want to do. I think it is an exciting time, like you say, for the future of Essex. There's those plans that are sort of looking at further down the road. I know they've got a few things they're trying to iron out before they sort of bring all that detail to fruition. But also, I think as well, with the bid for the women's professional tier one side, that if you sort of go around the club at the moment, that is the big focus. The real excitement off the pitch is about that bid and all the things that they are doing to try and ensure that we have some kind of professional women's team here in the county. So I think you're right, there's been a lot of work done off the pitch looking to the future. For me, I don't think we're entirely away from any of those historical the historical allegations and any repercussions from that. I know in the off season a lot sorted out in terms of the Newton report and the things that they're going to have to put in place, whether there is more to come with ECB or the IEC. I think although it does feel like things are moving on, I don't think we're completely away from there being any more to come from that. But Essex, as it is in its current day, they have to keep going. They have to keep planning for the future, and like you say, that's what they are doing with these plans. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see a bit more about anything redevelopment wise, and definitely there feels like a lot of excitement with the women's stuff. It feels a bit weird as well, because we're talking about another season of the Sunrise, but we know it might be the last season, and we don't quite know where that regional team will end up and who will be part of it and how it's all going to work. So there's lots of interesting things, I think, to come in the next few months off the pitch for Essex. But it's a community, isn't it? And they've worked hard to build a board that is reflective of the community here in Essex, of different skill sets across the county, and the being that the members committee as well, and having that relationship. So hopefully that's a positive thing that will work well for the club. And I guess that kind of goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning with club cricket. It's all about community that you build around you, with the people that run it and the people that come and watch and the people that come and play. And Essex have that in the way, and we see that replicated at club level everywhere.
Yeah, what about the fans as well? I know my old mate Dan Hagger is a regular fixture on your programme. Essex do have a loyal and supportive bunch of fans, and one of the things that has sort of started or been put in place by the club over the winter are these members' suppers. I think there have been three of them so far that are... I've been to each one of them, and they've got steadily larger, with more people turning up. And I think the plan from John Stevenson is to make these a very regular event, so that, you know, that it builds a bridge between, you know, supporters and the club. And it seems to go down really, really well. The last one was last week, and Keith Fletcher was there, obviously a real legend of the club, both for Essex and for England, really. So I like things like this. You say the members' committee as well. And I think it's really, really important. You know, there's a lot of noise going around at the moment about clubs having problems with relating to their supporters. I won't go on the Luddite route, but Essex seem to be going the other way and engage. And I think it's really important that if you want to take the club forward, you've got to bring the supporters and members with you. And I think Essex are really good at doing that.
Yeah, my dad's been to the Suppers as well, and he's been telling me how good they are. I haven't managed to get there, but he's every time he's rung me up and told me how good it was and the various stories, and I'm interested to see who they manage to get next, because they've had such good guests already. It'll be see who they manage to get. And yeah, those things are really important, like you say, for fan engagement. The other thing that the club has done really well since John Stevenson came in as chief exec is have the fans forum that they sometimes have, either sort of in an evening or sometimes at games, where they have something at lunchtime where members can come along and ask questions. And I think fans always respect it, and I think this across sports. I've been saying this as well with football recently as well. You might not like the answer that you hear from someone in authority at the club, but if they're fronting up and answering your questions, I think there's always something that fans respect about being able to have that open conversation. So I think those things are really good. And the engagement with guests and speakers and any kind of events, we probably did lose that kind of thing, didn't we, during COVID, when those things weren't able to happen. But now we are back to a normal that seems to have upped again. And everyone has a bit of nostalgia and a bit of a chance to be the cricket geek that we are. So all of that, I think, is really positive. And like you say, it just helps to strengthen relations between clubs and fans. And by the way, yeah, you did mention Dan Hagger, who often is on Around the Wicket. And we do like to have a fans panel where we get fans' thoughts each week on the various performances of Essex. So if anyone does does want to be a new recruit to the fans panel, we always welcome that.
I'll pop my CV over. So, just to remind listeners, Around the Wicket is back every Wednesday between 6 and 7 on BBC Essex. You can catch up on BBC Sounds.
Yeah, it's available to listen back to on BBC Sounds, and we always put the links on social media as well. And we have commentary, live commentary of every Essex game as well on the BBC Sport website and app. So we're always there to keep you company through the Essex games, and also we accompany the live stream on YouTube. So you can't really miss us if you're an Essex fan, I don't think.
Brilliant. And Like a pair of comfy old slippers, we got the Don Topleys of this world and all the other familiar voices to guide us through the action.
Yeah, we'll all be back at various points over the season. I know Don has got a pretty busy summer with the World Cup, the IPL, various places that he'll want to be balancing, getting out to watch and being a part of the BBC Essex team as well. But yeah, we'll all be available to listen to at some point across the cricket commentary. You'll probably hear some new voices across the various BBC local commentaries as well, because we obviously all share when we do the home and away games and get to hear different people's perspectives and get to hear different people's cricketing journeys as well. So hopefully be lots of familiar and new voices to listen to.
Fantastic. I can't wait. Victoria Polly from BBC Essex, real pleasure to talk to you and to hear a professional voice for a change, not from the normal amateurish stuff that I spout on this show.
Oh, no. Nonsense. We'll return the favour.
Anytime. Victoria, great to talk, and we'll catch up soon.
Thank you very much.
The wonderful Victoria Polly. And she asked for Anything by McFly. So this is McFly, and this is Party Girl.
The clock hit 12. She entered the room. Good looks could kill, then we all would be doomed. After just one kiss, you're not able to move from a venomous lips in a poison perfume. Yeah, he started swaying so sexy and looking at me, and he got me caught in a mind control. This place is prison. I'm chained up. Up and I'm out of mercy. She wouldn't let me go. She said she likes to dance all by herself, 'cause she's a party girl. She don't care for nobody else. She's in her own world.
Party Girl by McFly. That was requested by my guest this week, Victoria Polly from BBC Essex. It's 10 to 7. You're listening to Phoenix FM. At the top of the hour, I hand over to John Chubb with the excellent non-league hour. Then at 8, Gareth Williams, Bumper to Bumper. He's got 2 hours of him with excellent music for of all sorts, really. And then at 10, Madeline Christie's here with the night shift. So great stuff for the rest of the evening on Phoenix FM. Don't go anywhere. Right back in the world of cricket at the IPL, which has been going on for about 6 years now. Kolkata Knight Riders hit 272 for 7, which is the second highest total in IPL history, as they thrashed Delhi Capitals by 106 runs. Sunil Narine led the way by blitzing 85 of just 39 balls, while teenage debutant Ankrish Rughuvanshi, I think I've said that right, added 54. Andre Russell and Riku Singh also made big hitting contributions as Kolkata finished just 5 short of Sunrisers Hyderabad's IPL record total. Rishabh Pant top scored with 55 for Delhi, who fell to a thumping loss. KKR's huge total came just a week after Hyderabad posted a record 277 for 3, breaking the previous IPL best of 263 for 5 set by Royal Challengers Bangalore back in 2013. Kolkata, who were crowned IPL champions in 2012 and 2014, have won all 3 matches in the new season, and they top the 10-team table.
98 FM. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Right, on to the counties. Remember, it all starts tomorrow. Now, big news this week. Promoted Worcestershire have signed ex-West Indies skipper Jason Holder for the opening 5 county championship games as they return to Division 1. The 32-year-old Barbados all-rounder is scheduled to make his pairs debut against neighbours Warwickshire tomorrow, in fact, at Edgbaston. Holder will also play in the away games with Nottinghamshire and Kent. They come either side of the 2 home games with Durham and Somerset at their temporary home of Kidderminster. Holder has had 1 previous experience of county cricket when he joined North Hants for the first month of the 2019 season and played in 2 championship games and 5 one-day cup matches. He also would have played if it hadn't been for the rain for Brentwood Cricket Club at that time. Now, we did have Jason on at 98 Not Out back in May 2020, and here's a snippet of what he had to say back then.
I see myself as a loyal customer, man, and I would love to definitely go back to North Hants. I hold it, you know, very, very deep into my heart, and it's a place where I felt welcome. You know, I must always give credit to David Ripley, Alex Wakeley, who was the captain at the time, and even Adam Rossington. You know, these are guys that I really thank for the opportunity, and for me, I enjoyed county cricket, you know, and definitely I would be back.
Our North Hants fans that are listening, that's music to their ears, I'm sure. I'm not quite sure how North Hants fans are feeling now with Holder having signed for the pairs. But having said that, it's great to have him back amongst all the big names that are featuring in the county championship this year. Now, Glamorgan have been a double injury blow in to the new season. Opening batsman Eddie Barham and opening bowler Tim Goodson will both be missing when Glamorgan face Middlesex at Lords tomorrow. Barham dislocated a shoulder in training, while Van der Gooten is suffering from a calf injury. Barham's accident continues his bad luck with fitness after a freak hip injury in 2023 and an infection in 2022. Now, just going back to Worcestershire, Chief Executive Ashley Giles says that maybe the timing is right for the pairs to leave their iconic New Road home after another winter of severe flooding. The county had already moved their first 2 scheduled home games to Kidderminster, which is 16 miles down the road. But Giles fears that the effect of further weather-related damage from flooding, and as we've heard on the weather earlier on, this rain isn't going away. I don't think we can carry on like this. It's costing us a lot of money, Giles told the BBC. We're going to lose virtually 2 months of a 6-month season. The ground is here to stage cricket, to be a venue for entertainment and hospitality, but the conditions are seemingly getting worse. Now, New Road has staged championship cricket since 1899, a run only halted by the summer flood of 2007. One of the most picturesque grounds and one of the nicest places to come watch cricket anywhere in the country. Worsening weathers in the winters that followed since 2007 has exacerbated the process of looking elsewhere, and their long-standing second home at Chester Road, Kidderminster, has only ever been considered as a short-term fix.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
All right, just to round up. So the Cricketer magazine has put up their predictions. I will read them without any kind of viewpoint, but make of these what you will. Division 1, they see Surrey as champions with Lancashire runners-up, and the two relegated will be Kent and Worcestershire. In Division 2, winners Yorkshire and Sussex runners-up, with the bottom two being Gloucestershire at the bottom and then Leicestershire. What are your thoughts? Let us know. Get in touch. If you agree or disagree with the Cricketer, who's to say? It's all a bit of fun anyway. Now, tomorrow is the start of the season, and the fixtures are as follows. Durham host Hampshire at the Riverside. Kent host Somerset down at Canterbury. Lancashire are playing Surrey at Old Trafford. Nottinghamshire are playing Essex at Trent Bridge. Warwickshire are hosting Worcestershire at Edgbaston. And in Division 2, Derbyshire play Gloucestershire at the County Ground Derby. I'm sure Griff will be there. Middlesex are playing Glamorgan at Lords. Sussex are playing Northamptonshire at Hull. And Yorkshire at Headingley. Now, all matches start at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. But depending on where you are in the country, the weather forecast doesn't look that great. So I think I better play out with this one. This has been 98 Not Out with me, Darren Moo, to catch up on the phoenixfm.com website. Go to the podcast, go to YouTube, or just tune in next Thursday at 6 o'clock, and I'll catch you then. John Chubb is coming next.
Across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News.